Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yart Live. I am Dominic Enyart. Today, our show is going to be focusing on remembering the life of Bob Enyart. And we're actually going to be airing the eulogy which Will Duffy gave at Bob Enyart's funeral. And my dad, Bob, had specifically requested Will to do his funeral. And after hearing this, you'll know exactly why Bob asked Will to do his memorial. We hope to see you tomorrow for Theology Thursday. Then on Friday, Real Science Radio. We're going to be airing a science talk that he gave at Denver Bible Church, actually. And you won't want to miss that. But for now, the eulogy by Will Duffy. Will, thank you so much for all the hard work that you put into this. Will uses some slides in the eulogy, and we'll do our best to put those up on today's show summary at kgov.com. So if you want to see those, visit the site. But for now, let's roll the tape.
I told someone this morning, I feel like this is the most important thing I've ever had to do. Losing a loved one is hard, but it's even harder to lose someone so important to the body of Christ. I was fortunate enough to spend 6 days a week with Bob for 5 straight years. I worked full-time Monday through Friday for Bob Enyart Live, and then spent more than half the day with Bob on Sundays at Denver Bible Church. 6 years ago, Bob sent me this email. If you can't read it, it says, "Will, in case I forget to tell Cheryl, please let her know I asked you to do my funeral." I was honored, of course, but never imagined I would be standing here having to do this so soon. Today, we remember and honor a man who influenced and impacted the world in an immeasurable way. I believe everyone will learn something new today about Bob. And I think that is a beautiful thing about a memorial. We are here to remember the life of Bob Enyart. Connie, you have been with your beloved Robert longer than anyone here. You have been right by his side since January 10th, 1959, the day you gave birth to him. You were, without a doubt, Bob's biggest fan. I'm terribly sorry you had to outlive your son, but thank you so much for being by his side every step of the way, from his very first steps to being at the hospital with him the final week of his life. I want everyone here today and those watching online to learn something new about Bob, something that you never knew, to give you a deeper look into his life. Connie, this will obviously be the hardest to accomplish with you, but I do have one thing. Bob told me something he did as a child, and he said he never told you. I think he didn't want to frighten you. But one time, Bob walked into a train tunnel in order to walk through it, and when he was halfway through, a train entered the tunnel. He knew he could never outrun the train, so he put his back up against the wall, turned his head sideways, and hoped there was enough room between the wall and the train. The train passed just inches from his body. Bob's life was always an adventure, and he did not shy away from danger and excitement. We come to 1968, and believe it or not, this was when Bob was in his first debate. He was only in the fourth grade, and he was already debating. He was attending St. Anthony's School in Hawthorne, New Jersey, and Bob was arguing for the importance of the Vietnam War. Here is a picture of Bob and his brother Brian in their Little League gear before a game in 1971. Just 2 years later, in 1973, Bob became a Christian at the age of 14. Ron Hutchcraft of Campus Life led Bob to Christ. remember the name Ron Hutchcraft, as I will come back to him later. Bob entered high school as a freshman later this year and was already on fire for the Lord. He was in a rock band, and Bob immediately started preaching the gospel to the band members, and in a short amount of time, the entire band was converted and playing Christian music. This band was the genesis of a group called Agape Kingdom. For some backstory here, I'm going to read an excerpt from this letter written by Rich Scordato. My name is Richard Scordato. In 1975, I became a Christian at the age of 46. In about 6 months' time, the rest of my family, my wife and five children, were also saved. I guess you could say the Holy Spirit bombarded our family that year. How we came to know the Lord is just unbelievable. Our house was a haven for teenagers. It had perfect accommodations with a ground level basement, piano, and the pool, which not too many families in our neighborhood had at that time. When our family began to attend the Church of the Nazarene in Oradell, New Jersey, many of these teenagers wanted to come to church with us. They were not from evangelical homes, but every Sunday, a caravan of cars would leave our house en route to church. The group eventually decided to call themselves Agape Kingdom. They had t-shirts made and wore them to their public high school. Each morning, they met in the lunchroom and prayed. Many of them carried Bibles and witnessed to the other students. The principal of the high school told me he'd never seen anything like it, and neither had I. The leader of the group was a dynamic young man by the name of Robert Enyart. Bob led dozens of people in that high school to the Lord. And as their group grew, they became known around the school as the Jesus Freaks. The principal of the school actually told Bob that Agape Kingdom was not allowed to pray on school grounds. And so Bob, being Bob, responded by setting up a daily prayer meeting every morning in the main lobby of the school as all the students came in. Bob's rebellion and protest side started at a very early age. Bob really wanted his father to become a Christian at this time, and so Bob would actually roll gospel tracts up in the toilet paper roll in the bathroom so that they would fall out when his dad was in there. He was dedicated and creative at an early age as well. As a sophomore in high school, at just 16 years old, Bob started a Bible study for teenagers. After graduating high school, Bob immediately enrolled at Nyack College, a private Christian school in New York City, New York, to study theology. In 1979, Bob drove seven teenagers in his own van from New Jersey all the way to California just to see Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa. The next year, Bob's passion for the Lord was instrumental in his father's salvation. His dad became a believer in September of 1980. In May of 1981, Bob had one of his first big ideas. He wanted to travel from New Jersey to Southern California on a moped. He wanted to visit Calvary Chapel again, but he wanted it to be an adventure. Bob was only 22 years old at the time and spent an entire month planning and preparing. Everyone likes to ask his mother, Connie, why she let him do something so dangerous, and her answer has always been the same. In hindsight, I wish I would have joined my son on that trip. The trip was so daring that it even made the local newspaper at that time. When he arrived at Calvary Chapel, they immediately offered him a place to stay for the night. He attended a men's prayer breakfast the next morning, and in that meeting, he prayed for a place to stay while he was there and a job to work as well. Two men were standing next to Bob in the prayer circle. One offered him a room in his house, and the other offered him a job at his car agency. Less than 3 years later, in 1984, Bob was married, had his first son, Josiah, and moved to Arizona with his new family to attend Arizona State University. While still enrolled at school, McDonnell Douglas offered Bob a position to work on the Apache helicopter. In late 1985, Bob missed his theological studies and decided to leave his position with McDonnell Douglas and move to Colorado in order to study the Bible under Bob Hill at the Derby School of Theology in Commerce City. Shortly after moving to Colorado, Bob's second son, Nathaniel, Nate, was born. Bob quickly interviewed with US West, we all now know them as Quest, and I'll never forget this story. Bob was interviewing with US West on a Friday. They were looking for someone who was proficient enough in a particular software that they could teach the software to their employees. They asked Bob, "Can you teach this software to our employees?" Before I tell you how he answered, Bob had never even heard of the software before. So naturally, Bob told them he could absolutely teach the software to their employees. They asked him to start the following Monday, and so he spent the entire weekend learning the software and started teaching it the next week. Not many people would have been able to pull that off, but Bob, of course, could. While working for US West, Bob wrote a software program called Tickler. Two operating systems really wanted to buy this from him, Microsoft and one other one. Unfortunately, Bob went with the other one. They ended up losing the OS battle to Microsoft and went out of business. Also, while working for US West, Bob started writing articles for PC Week in April of 1986. Bob told me that after each article he wrote, he would send PC Week a bill that was $100 higher than the previous bill. He honestly just thought it would be fun, and he was curious what they would do, and they kept paying it. He started writing articles that were critical of Windows, Microsoft's operating system. This got the attention of Microsoft, and in order to get Bob to stop writing the articles, they hired him. So in the summer of 1987, Bob moved his family to Redmond, Washington to work for Microsoft. He actually once had dinner at Bill Gates' house, and this was before Bill Gates was married, and Bob said there was literally no furniture anywhere. Bob said he had to lean against a pillar while having a conversation because there was nowhere to sit. Another fun Microsoft story is when Bob was originally hired, they brought a form for him to sign, and it was essentially something to protect Microsoft's intellectual property if Bob ever left the company. Bob read it, and in his opinion, signing this thing was handing over his brain to Microsoft. So Bob kept delaying signing it and making excuses until they forgot to have him sign it. Fast forward, and when Bob left Microsoft, they went to get the form to remind him that he was not allowed to share any information he learned while at Microsoft or any ideas he himself came up with while employed at Microsoft, and they went into a full-blown panic when they could not find a signed form. Most people don't know why Bob left Microsoft. There was a huge national conference in Las Vegas. Bill Gates was the keynote speaker. Microsoft had the largest exhibit booth at the conference in order to show off some new state-of-the-art networking capabilities. Bill Gates claimed that their software was providing connectivity between various computer systems at the booth, but it wasn't. The communication was being simulated, and the actual wires to each station were not even connected to one another. Bob could not take part in this, so he quit Microsoft and wrote an article in PC Week exposing Bill Gates' lie and fraudulent misrepresentation. As you can see, Bob has always cared about truth and justice. Bob moved his family back to Colorado, and in early 1989, Bob joined Operation Rescue, and with a few others began a five-day-a-week presence at Planned Parenthood, which at the time was at 20th and Vine. Bob was arrested three times this year for his attempts at rescuing, which was joining with others to prevent access to abortion facilities. In 1990, Bob was arrested twice more for rescuing, and in February of this year, Bob also resigned from the Adams County Accountability Committee. Adams County decided to hand out condoms in their schools in order to prevent teen pregnancy. Bob resigned in protest, claiming that handing out condoms would only encourage increased sexual activity and therefore would lead to more teen pregnancy. Of course, tragically, Bob was right. Just three short years later, Adams City High School saw a birth rate increase of 42%, and 108 babies were born in a single school year. That's one out of every eight girls had a baby that year. The Rocky Mountain News newspaper printed Bob's letter to the editor explaining why he resigned 3 years before and how sadly his prediction came true. On May 1st, 1991, Bob began hosting a daily radio show on AM 670 KLTT. One of his first interviews was abortionist Warren Hearn. Warren Hearn demanded a list ahead of time of every single question that Bob would ask. Otherwise, he would not agree to the interview. In typical Bob fashion, he sent him a list of questions, and then for the actual interview, snuck one in the middle of the interview, catching him off guard. Unbeknownst to many, Bob was really into country western dancing at this time as well. His favorite local place was the Stampede in Aurora. In April of 1993, Bob decided to try a TV call-in talk show. He called it Bob Enyart Live.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the nation's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at Bob Enyart Live that you would like to censor anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice. Raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered.
It originally aired out of a little television station in Elizabeth, Colorado, and because they were in the woods near Elizabeth, that made for some interesting events.
This is a guy I was telling you, you know, Parker.
What is this, Phil?
He says they're eagle eggs, but he says because you're on the air, maybe you could...
Wait, what do you mean eagle eggs?
Well, you know, eagle.
Eagle?
Yeah.
Like real eagles?
Like a bald eagle.
So what does he want us to do with these eagle eggs?
I don't know.
Don't know.
Hamlet.
You know, I think it would be a shame to let him go to waste. So I think I'm going to cook him, I guess. Let me see here. Whoa, that cooks quick. I'm going to go to South Bend, Indiana. Holly, speak your mind.
Yes. For one, I'd like to make a comment on the fact that you just cooked an egg. Now, don't you think it's kind of evil? The fact that you're cooking an eagle egg and they're, like, non-existent almost anymore?
Greg, could you get me salt or pepper or some condiments? Well, Holly, what do you mean? It's evil to cook an egg? Huh?
To cook an eagle egg.
Yeah, but these aren't eagles. These are just eggs. Right?
No.
We'll be right back. Pardon me. Excuse me one moment here. Is pepper good? Is pepper good on? I don't know. Here, guys, please hold that. And a little bit of salt is good on everything, I guess. Okay. And Holly, I'm sorry, it's all gone. I can't share it with you.
Oh, that's all right. I'm a vegetarian anyways.
So, Holly, what's up?
Well, for one, I just wanted to comment.
Yeah?
On the fact that those eggs could have been eagle. At one time, if you would have let them go.
Yeah, but they're not eagles. I mean, they're
no,
just,
not anymore.
Well, they're just eggs.
Yes, but they could have been eggs.
But when does an eagle become an eagle?
I guess at the time of conception.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you think I broke the law against eating eagles or killing eagles?
Yes, I do.
Even though they weren't hatched?
Yes, I do.
All right. You're not pro-choice, are you?
Yes, I am.
You are?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you're against killing unborn eagles in a shell, but unborn babies, you think it's okay to kill them?
Well, for one, eagles are almost extinct, and humans are very overpopulated.
All right, so if we want to kill some little kids because there's too many humans, is that okay with you, Holly?
Sure.
Yeah, we'll be right back with Holly if she's still there.
About a year later, in 1994, Bob met Cheryl for the first time at a God's Criminal Justice System seminar. Funny story. Bob saw Cheryl walk into the restroom and asked someone helping him if she would go into the restroom and get Cheryl's phone number. She walked into the restroom and changed her mind and told Bob, "You need to do it yourself." After the seminar, everyone crowded around Bob to meet him and ask him questions, and he noticed Cheryl walk out of the building to leave, so he ran out to the parking lot to introduce himself. "Cheryl, Bob was head over heels for you. He loved you so much and couldn't wait to introduce you to all of his friends and acquaintances. I loved how he always called you Doll, and he always made you laugh, which I know was so special to him. And people probably do not realize what you sacrificed and went through being married to a TV and radio personality. That was a massive labor of love, and I can't thank you enough for staying by his side through thick and thin, through the death threats, the arrests, the jail time, and everything else that comes with being a warrior for God. He needed you in his life more than anyone, and you were there for him until his last breath." In 1995, Bob led his first Bible tour of Israel. Yes, that is Cheryl on a camel in Jerusalem. After a year and a half broadcasting out of the tiny studio in Elizabeth, the show moved to a studio in Arvada and aired via satellite in 12 cities across the country.
"Now let me explain to you, if I may, without any interruption. The intentional purpose
ma'am,
of the Jody, HIV virus
Jody,
is nothing more
Jody,
than a man-made
Jody, Jody. All right, I put Jody on hold. Jody, you're on hold. I'll bring you back if you're going to interact with me. Jody?
Yes.
Okay, you need to interact with me. All right?
Sorry?
We're on TV. So I just want to ask for this uninterruptible speech you'd like to give.
Mm-hmm.
How much time do you need?
Well, at least about 6 minutes, sir, or 5 minutes.
Six
at the
minutes.
Most, sir.
All right. Well, now let me ask you.
Yes, sir.
It cost us probably, if we worked it all out, about $300 a minute.
I understand.
So could you give us, could I put you on hold? You give us a credit card number, and we'll put an $1,800 charge on it, and then I'll give you the 6 minutes. Do you have a credit card to do that?
Well, I'm not going to be able to do that. And let me say this much. Just give me 2 minutes.
Okay. And if we interact in a dialogue, then it's free. It's free for you if we interact. But monologues have to pay their own way.
Hello?
We're out of time, Jody. All right, Jody, could I ask you one thing?
Yes, of course.
Do they know you're using the phone right now?
I really don't frankly care.
All right, thank you for your call.
And then in October of 1995, the show moved to a much larger studio in South Bend, Indiana, where it began to stretch across the country.
It Takes a Village by Hillary Clinton, and I'm real excited to get the book because she's out on her publicity tour. I'm going to read these quotes. It takes a village to raise a child. That's the idea in Hillary's book. It's supposedly an old African proverb that some liberal probably made up recently. Well, anyway, it takes a village to raise a child. Not only wrong, but they're corrupt and maybe even evil. Maybe, not maybe, they're evil, they're wicked, they're destructive. So I'm going to read two or three of them, real short, real to the point, and I am saying that these are the notions of a wicked person. Hello, caller.
Hi.
Hi. Do you agree with Hillary?
Yes, indeed. You agree with those, with these quotes? Let me read them to you one by one, and let me tell me if you agree or not. Here's the first quote. The government must declare the child to be the most precious treasure of the people. You agree with that sentiment generally?
Certainly.
All right, here's the next page, page 404. The government's concern belongs more to the child than to the adult. Do you agree that the government should be more concerned with the child than the adult?
Yeah, okay.
All right, and then the last one is that the government's financial irresponsibility turns the blessing of children into a curse for the parents. That the government should help parents so that their children would be a blessing and not a curse. You agree with that?
Yeah, I do.
All right, Tom, you're not very convincing, but I'll go with it. All right, now this book here, can you see it? I have it in my hands. It Takes a Village by Hillary Clinton. Could you see that?
Yeah.
You can see it way up there in Ontario. That's amazing how satellites work, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, somebody gave me the, look at this book. Somebody gave me this out of the library, but it looks so old. And since Hillary's book is brand new, I don't understand. Oh my, look at, you know what somebody did? Jerry, did you do this? Somebody put Hillary's book cover on top of an old book. This is not Hillary's. Oh my, look at this book. I can't even believe it. Can we zoom in on this book, please? Can we zoom in? Yeah, get that closer. Do you see this, Tom, in Ontario? Let me show you the
title. That's wrong.
Let me show you the title page here.
That's wrong.
Let me show you the title page.
That's wrong.
Adolf Hitler wrote this book, Mein Kampf, a long time ago. He was a wicked and evil man. And if you go through this book, you'll find incredible similarities. Incredible. Not all of it, of course, but incredible similarities with Hillary Clinton and the whole liberal crew.
In 1996, Bob led his second Bible tour of Israel. Later that same year, Bob was invited to a Denver Broncos game by a friend, and the game was on a Sunday. Bob accepted the invitation even though he knew he was getting a vasectomy reversal the day before. This was the kind of friend Bob was. I think Bob forgot about all the stairs you have to climb in an NFL stadium. After obviously struggling to get all the way up to their seats, Bob explained why he was in pain, and his friend was in shock that he was even at the game. Bob never said no, which was an incredible characteristic, especially someone with so many fans, followers, and friends. Around this time, Bob started his Bible study in Inglewood, Colorado, at the Mallee Senior Recreation Center. Bob continued with the Bob Enyart Live TV show out of South Bend, Indiana in 1997, and this was also the year his son Zachary, Zach, was born. In 1998, Bob's TV show continued to grow and spread throughout the country, peaking in over 80 cities. Nielsen ratings showed that on certain nights, Bob had a larger audience than Conan O'Brien, Tom Snyder on CBS, and Masterpiece Theater on PBS. The show also had similar numbers to Entertainment Tonight and Northern Exposure. Bob launched KGov.com in 1998, and the website quickly made its way around national and international headlines when Bob burned OJ in February of 1999. In order to protest murderer OJ Simpson, Bob purchased his Hall of Fame award and his two jerseys and burned them on the steps of the LA courthouse. This event led to a media frenzy across the United States and was also reported by CBC News in Canada, by the BBC in England, and all around the world. It was also covered on Comedy Central's The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
Just one day after the OJ auction, Bob Enyart, a Christian talk show host who bought $16,000 worth of the murderer's tchotchkes, burned them in front of a crowd of angry pro-murderers on the steps of the Los Angeles Criminal Court building to protest OJ's acquittal. Take that, bad jersey. There's one piece of athletic apparel that will never again subvert the American criminal justice system. This man claims that destroying this trophy must mean he loves it very much. Enyart's extremely vocal detractors included these two men who showed up to scream out in support of OJ, but had to leave early to attend the third annual JonBenet Deserved What She Got rally. According to the Associated Press, OJ said he wondered about the mentality of people burning up $16,000 that could be used for social programs or medical causes, like, say, finding a cure for 80 stab wounds.
This event was the beginning of Bob's reminder to everyone that it's no longer a justice system, now it's just a system. Bob told the media this: since the government will not put OJ to death, then it is left to those who care about righteousness to do what we can, and that is to put to death the memory of his career. Bob released a 2-hour resource this year called Mount Moriah, Evidence for the Resurrection. Here is a short clip from that resource.
A lot of the guys in the Bible, all their dirty laundry is there for everyone to read, which shows that they didn't just make up a religion. Because if Peter was making this stuff up, he wouldn't say, I denied Christ. He wouldn't say that, I ran like a coward. He wouldn't say that. If David was making this stuff up, he wouldn't say, I committed adultery with Bathsheba, and Uriah the Hittite, her husband, I had him murdered. But we know this book isn't just men who wanted to make themselves famous and start a religion, because then they'd put just all the good things about them in the book. But all their worst sins are there for all the world to read, because God wanted to show that you don't have to be good on your own, because you can't be good enough on your own. In fact, if we all admit it, we do some pretty terrible things. Just like Peter, just like David, just like Abraham did some pretty terrible things. But God enabled us to be forgiven because he provided a sacrifice.
One other item of note in 1998. Bob wrote a software program that year called display.exe. This program could, among other things, display every page of every published book. This might sound like a joke, but it was not. Bob's mind was nothing short of brilliant. Bob's TV show ended in early 1999 when Oral Roberts purchased his TV slot for more money than Bob could afford. What's funny is that Oral Roberts was convinced that Bob's successful viewership numbers were due to his time slot. It was a midnight time slot. Of course, the success was due to Bob, and Oral Roberts had to learn that the hard way when he had very few viewers at midnight and their show failed. Bob's TV show turned off some Christians, but what's interesting is how many unbelievers it attracted. According to Nielsen ratings, Bob Enyart Live had more unbelievers than any other Christian TV show at the time. And is this that hard to imagine? I'm sorry, but when I see a regular Christian show on TV, I can't change the channel fast enough. I think you all know what I'm talking about, right? Blessings, brother. Thank you for tuning in. And let me tell you what God will do in your life if you just make a small donation to our ministry. Bob's goal was to attract the unsaved and get them to stay on the channel and listen long enough to hear the truth of the gospel, and his show was a wild success in this regard. Bob was invited in June of 1999 to be a guest on Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect. Bill Maher took offense, serious offense, when his own audience would cheer what Bob had to say.
The big problem isn't that they're telling teens to drink beer. I mean, that's a problem. But the bigger problem is the animal rights folks, they don't really elevate the rights of animals, because you can't do that. They denigrate the rights of people. It's not that they love animals.
Shut up!
Thank you.
Morons! Shut up at my show. Sorry.
Bob was a guest on Politically Incorrect 6 times from 1999 to 2001. After appearing on a Father's Day special of the show in June of 1999, a woman named Suzanne Schell wrote this and posted it to her website after the show. She said, "Fathers were featured on ABC's Politically Incorrect Father's Day program last month. One of the fathers featured was Bob Enyart, talk show host and father who was jailed for spanking his stepson. I have stated publicly that I don't believe that a bruise on the bottom necessarily constitutes abuse, and for that I have earned the title of baby bruiser. I won't bow down to the child saver's foolish rhetoric because as a parent, I answer to a higher authority. I believe that my children's immortal souls were more important than a bruise on their backside. A bruise or a welt is not a life-threatening injury and will fade instantly in comparison to the fate our children would suffer if their soul was lost to wickedness due to our failure to raise them up properly. Bob Enyart did not sell his soul to keep himself out of jail. I sure would like to be able to compare kids. I want to see a normal day in the Martin Short, Donnie Osmond, and Armin Brott households and compare them to a normal day in the Enyart household. I would anticipate that Enyart's children would be much more pleasant to be around than the other celebrities' kids." Amen? Amen. While on Politically Incorrect, Bob would look for any opportunity to talk about abortion on the show, which really frustrated Bill Maher.
PETA is against killing fetal pigs and doing research with their organs, but killing fetal humans, boys and girls, and selling their organs to universities, that's okay with PETA.
I know everything comes back to abortion, Bob.
Bob had no problem getting the crowd on his side.
I love animals. You know, they're delicious. And if... And if God didn't want us to eat animals, he wouldn't have made them out of meat.
Bob even went after Jimmy Kimmel on the program.
If you compare it to other athletes, rapists, you know, that, etc., that's nothing. It's really not that big
right.
a deal.
Don't bring Bill Clinton into this, or OJ, but you know what? You know, if you're a lying fornicator, you could go to great heights in this country. And you are...
I hope so.
21st century.
Aren't you a loser if you're not a fornicator, really?
Yeah, no, it's actually the opposite, Jimmy. Your wife would tell you, right? Your wife would say, Jimmy, don't do that.
Other memorable moments in 1999 include Bob's nationwide protest of Bill Clinton for raping Juanita Broderick. They conducted Clinton rapist protests in 144 cities, including Auckland, New Zealand. Bob released his life's work, The Plot, in 1999. And in this year, Bob and others went to West Bowles Community Church and cut down 2 trees planted in memory of the Columbine murderers. Someone told Bob he should go at night so he would not get caught. He responded by saying, "Criminals act at night. I will do this in broad daylight." And lastly, Bob's son Michael was born in November of 1999. Bob started Denver Bible Church the first Sunday in the year 2000. Around this time, Bob had an idea that he never pursued. He wanted to call it the Tooth Fairy, except fairy was spelled F-E-R-R-Y. His idea was a company where you could ship your children's baby teeth when they fell out, and they would be properly stored, and if they ever needed stem cells later on in life, they could get them from their own banked baby teeth. This was also a solution that would be highly superior to embryonic stem cells from aborted babies. In mid-2001, Bob's son Dominic was born. This would be his 5th son without any daughters. Add Cheryl's 2 boys, Bob's stepsons, and Bob and Cheryl raised 7 boys, and as Bob always loved to say, they never figured out how to have a girl. Around this time, as Bob continued his daily radio talk show on KLTT, Bob created an idea which he called 900 email. This was a way for anyone to get a message to anyone else, no matter who they were or where they were. A famous athlete, a celebrity, a politician, a famous author, scientist, literally whoever you wanted to reach, Bob created a way to get a message to them and also guarantee that you would get a response from them personally. This idea was pitched to Yahoo in person, but email was still relatively new and it was being sold as free, so they did not see the light. I believe this idea from Bob is still incredibly relevant and needed today. In preparing for today, I spent countless hours researching Bob's life, talking to people that have been in his life for decades, scouring kgov.com, and racking my brain at all of the accomplishments he had during his life. I was unable to include a vast majority of what I found and the stories I was told by all of you. And there is still another 20 years that I haven't even covered. So I will quickly run down a list of things that happened the last 20 years and spotlight a couple of them. Bob taught us that regulating abortion is wrong and it's not the way to end abortion. And any law that ends with the meaning "and then you can kill the baby" is a bad law. By the way, Bob purchased andthenyoucankillthebaby.com, which to this day takes you to National Right to Life's website. Bob rebuked National Right to Life at their closed door board meeting. He founded American Right to Life as a national organization unwilling to compromise in the fight for the unborn. Bob was instrumental in 3 personhood bills in Colorado. He was boots on the ground collecting signatures as often as he could. Bob created Real Science Friday, a dedicated show to science and the creation evolution debate. He was sued by NPR's Science Friday and renamed it to Real Science Radio. Bob offered Jack Horner, famous paleontologist, a $20,000 grant to carbon-14 date the soft tissue they found inside of a T-Rex dinosaur bone. Of course, Jack Horner refused because it's not about doing actual science, but simply not contradicting what they already believe. So Bob purchased dinosaursofttissue.com, which hosts the single largest collection of peer-reviewed scientific papers on dinosaur original biological material. In 2008, one of Bob's largest ideas, and I literally mean largest, was his Sheets of Shame project when the Democratic National Convention came to Colorado. He wanted to welcome them with a message that would be seen by anyone and everyone. This project was something that many of us never thought he would actually pull off. But of course, Bob was a born leader and a slave driver at times if need be, and Bob pulled off something that possibly no one else could have.
Check this out from Sky Fox here. This is an attempt at the Guinness World Book of Records for the largest protest sign. Look at this, destroys unborn children. That is over near Lookout Mountain. I don't know what it takes to get in the Guinness World Book of Records in terms of protest signs, but that's pretty big. We'll be right back.
That video was taken by a helicopter. In case it wasn't clear, that video was taken by a helicopter. That's what it took to actually see the sign, and it wasn't near, you know, Table Mountain, it was the whole mountain. Bob debated dozens and dozens of people. After Bob debated Alana Goldman, I was with Bob at the Cabin Studio, and the debate was so successful, I was working on a video to put on YouTube. It started snowing, and this was supposed to be a big snowstorm, so I left the studio before the roads would get covered. We got a ton of snow that night, and after digging myself out the next day, I made my way to the studio, and when I got there, Bob was already there. I was shocked, and he proceeded to tell me he never left. He stayed late and ended up getting snowed in and just decided to work overnight to finish the video that I had started. Another debate Bob did was against the leader of the King James Only movement, Will Kinney. Bob and I did this debate together, and as we were doing research, we discovered there was a Bible still in existence from the year 1602 that contained the original handwritten notes from the original translators of the 1611 King James Bible. But this Bible had never been photographed or scanned. Upon digging, we figured out that this Bible is actually considered a national treasure in England, and it's in high security storage, and it's only ever removed for special events. Bob taught me to uncover every stone, so I called the Bodleian Library in Oxford and told them Bob and I were researchers and wanted to see the Bible in person. When she found out we were calling from Colorado, she was blown away. Impressed by our desire to travel across the globe and our desire to see this treasure, she said we could see it. So Bob and I flew to England, and when we got there, we told the security in the rare books department that we were there to see the 1602 Bishop's Bible. They said that can't be true because no one gets to see that Bible. They had never even seen it. So they called our contact, and she said to let us see it and that it had been pulled out of storage and transported to the library that morning. They were in shock. While Bob and I were going through this national treasure, a man walked up to us who turned out to be a professor at Oxford. He asked us, "Is that the 1602 Bishop's Bible?" And we said, "Yes." And he said, "I've never seen that before in person, and I've personally researched it." KGov.com is an invaluable resource. I want to point out two things on the website. KGov has always contained a link on the homepage called Errata. This is where Bob publicly keeps track of all of the errors that he has made over the years. When have you ever heard of anyone doing something like that? The other link that has always been on the homepage says the gospel. I asked Bob one day why he does what he does, and he said this. He said, "Will, I use the news of the day to preach the good news of Jesus Christ." Bob's motivation in everything he did was to encourage others to come to a saving knowledge of Christ. KGov says this: "We ask God to help us share the good news of forgiveness and eternal life available if you trust in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ." And Bob has always offered his Mount Moriah Bible study for free to anyone who simply asks. I'll never forget, one time, Bob even got the local newscaster to preach the gospel on the news.
Happening right now, testimony at the state capitol on whether to repeal the death penalty here in Colorado.
Today we'll be talking about the death penalty.
Christian radio broadcaster Bob Enyer believes repealing the death penalty could lead to even more violence.
Jail is like time out for adults. In jail, you play basketball, foosball, you gamble, you watch virtual pornography on TV. Jail is a joke.
Enyer says Jesus was crucified for the sins of humanity.
Those who argue the death penalty is immoral are basically accusing God the Father of being unjust.
Recall that I told you to remember the name Ron Hutchcraft. Ron is who led Bob to the Lord back in 1973. When Bob left on his moped for California in 1981, his parents, Bob Sr. and Connie, they attended a campus life fundraiser banquet in New Jersey. There were about 300 people in attendance. Ron Hutchcraft was speaking at the event, and he said to never underestimate the importance of just a single person coming to the Lord. He then proceeded to say that he was going to say a name, and he wanted everyone in the room to stand up if they came to Christ because of this person. He then said the name Robert Enyer, and over 100 people in the room stood up. Bob's parents were in shock. They had no idea. I have always been most impressed by Bob's ministry in how many people he helped bring to Christianity and those he motivated to return to the faith and really live out their Christian faith. If Bob's ministry was instrumental in your salvation, or it brought you back to living out your faith, please stand up now. From Bob's first plot, his life's work, to his final plot, where he will be buried, His ministry spanned 30 years on this earth. He impacted and touched an unquantifiable number of lives. And your eyes are not deceiving you. Bob will be buried with the backdrop of North Table Mountain and the canvas that held his world's largest protest sign. The one thing I didn't think to ask Bob before he passed was what he wants us to do now that he's gone. I haven't been able to stop thinking about this. I've been thinking about this nonstop for the last 3 weeks, and it finally hit me what I think he would say to us all. I think he would say, as you all move on with your lives, wherever you go, whatever you do, please never forget in everything to do right and risk the consequences.
Will, thank you so much for that. That was absolutely beautiful. And like I said before, if you want to see the slides, visit the show page at kgov.com. Hope to see you guys again tomorrow for Theology Thursday, and then on Friday for Real Science Radio with Fred Williams. Support at kgov.com/store. And this is Dominic Enyart for Bob Enyart Live. May God bless you.